Chapter 7. Mr. Tetterby elevated his eyebrows, folded his newspaper afresh, and carried his eyes up it, and down it, and across it, but was wandering in his attention, and not reading it. Mrs. Tetterby, at the same time, laid the cloth, but rather as if she were punishing the table than preparing the family supper, hitting it unnecessarily hard with the knives and forks, slapping it with the plates, dinting it with the salt cellar, and coming heavily down upon it with the loaf. "Ah, dear me, dear me, dear me," said Mrs. Tetterby. "That's the way the world goes." "My duck," returned her husband, looking round again, "you said that before. Which is the way the world goes?" "Oh, nothing," said Mrs. Tetterby. "Sophia," remonstrated her husband, "you said that before too." "Well, I'll say it again if you like," returned Mrs. Tetterby. "Oh, nothing there." "And again if you like, oh, nothing there." "And again if you like, oh, nothing now then." Mr. Tetterby brought his eye to bear upon the partner of his bosom, and said, in mild astonishment, "My little woman, what has put you out?" "I'm sure I don't know," she retorted. "Don't ask me. Who said I was put out at all? I never did." Mr. Tetterby gave up the perusal of his newspaper as a bad job, and, taking a slow walk across the room, with his hands behind him, and his shoulders raised his gait according perfectly with the resignation of his manner, addressed himself to his two eldest offspring. "Your supper will be ready in a minute, Dolphus," said Mr. Tetterby. "Your mother has been out in the wet, to the cook's shop, to buy it. It was very good of your mother so to do. You shall get some supper too, very soon, Johnny. Your mother's pleased with you, my man, for being so attentive to your precious sister." Mrs. Tetterby, without any remark, but with a decided subsidence of her animosity towards the table, finished her preparations, and took, from her ample basket, a substantial slab of hot piece pudding wrapped in paper, and a basin covered with a saucer, which, on being uncovered, sent forth an odor so agreeable, that the three pair of eyes in the two beds opened wide, and fixed themselves upon the banquet. Mr. Tetterby, without regarding this tacit invitation to be seated, stood repeating slowly, "Yes, yes, your supper will be ready in a minute, Dolphus. Your mother went out in the wet, to the cook's shop, to buy it. It was very good of your mother so, to do." Until Mrs. Tetterby, who had been exhibiting sundry tokens of contrition behind him, caught him round the neck, and wept. "Oh, Dolphus," said Mrs. Tetterby, "how could I go and behave so?" This reconciliation affected Adolphus the younger, and Johnny to that degree, that they both, as with one accord, raised a dismal cry, which had the effect of immediately shutting up the round eyes in the beds, and utterly routing the two remaining little Tetterbys, just then stealing in from the adjoining closet to see what was going on in the eating way. "I am sure, Dolphus," sobbed Mrs. Tetterby, "coming home, I had no more idea than a child unborn." Mr. Tetterby seemed to dislike this figure of speech, and observed, "Say than the baby, my dear." "Had no more idea than the baby," said Mrs. Tetterby. "Johnny, don't look at me, but look at her, or she'll fall out of your lap and be killed, and then you'll die in agonies of a broken heart, and serve you right. No more idea I hadn't than that, darling, of being cross when I came home." But somehow, Dolphus, Mrs. Tetterby paused, and again turned her wedding ring round and round upon her finger. "I see," said Mr. Tetterby. "I understand. My little woman was put out. Hard times, and hard weather, and hard work, make it trying now and then. I see, bless your soul. No wonder. Dolph, my man," continued Mr. Tetterby, exploring the basin with a fork, "here's your mother been and bought, at the cook's shop, besides peace pudding, a whole knuckle of a lovely roast leg of pork, with lots of crackling left upon it, and with seasoning gravy and mustard quite unlimited. Hand in your plate, my boy, and begin while it's simmering." "Master Adolphus," needing no second summons, received his portion with eyes rendered moist by appetite, and withdrawing to his particular stool, fell upon his supper tooth and nail. Johnny was not forgotten, but received his rations on bread, lest he should, in a flush of gravy, trickle any on the baby. He was required, for similar reasons, to keep his pudding, when not on active service, in his pocket. There might have been more pork on the knucklebone, which knucklebone the carver at the cook's shop had assuredly not forgotten in carving for previous customers, but there was no stint of seasoning, and that is an accessory dreamily suggesting pork, unpleasantly cheating the sense of taste. The piece pudding too, the gravy and mustard, like the eastern rose in respect of the nightingale, if they were not absolutely pork, had lived near it. So, upon the whole, there was the flavor of a middle-sized pig. It was irresistible to the Tetterbys in bed, who, though professing to slumber peacefully, crawled out when unseen by their parents, and silently appealed to their brothers for any gastronomic token of fraternal affection. They, not hard of heart, presenting scraps in return, it resulted that a party of light skirmishers in nightgowns were careering about the parlor all through supper, which harassed Mr. Tetterby exceedingly, and once or twice imposed upon him the necessity of a charge, before which these guerrilla troops retired in all directions and in great confusion. Mrs. Tetterby did not enjoy her supper. There seemed to be something on Mrs. Tetterby's mind. At one time she laughed without reason, and at another time she cried without reason, and at last she laughed and cried together in a manner so very unreasonable, that her husband was confounded. "My little woman," said Mr. Tetterby, "if the world goes that way, it appears to go the wrong way, and to choke you." "Give me a drop of water," said Mrs. Tetterby, struggling with herself, "and don't speak to me for the present, or take any notice of me. Don't do it." Mr. Tetterby, having administered the water, turned suddenly on the unlucky Johnny, who was full of sympathy, and demanded why he was wallowing there, in gluttony and idleness, instead of coming forward with the baby, that the sight of her might revive his mother. Johnny immediately approached, borne down by its weight, but Mrs. Tetterby, holding out her hand to signify that she was not in a condition to bear that trying appeal to her feelings, he was interdicted from advancing another inch, on pain of perpetual hatred from all his dearest connections, and accordingly retired to his stool again, and crushed himself as before. After a pause, Mrs. Tetterby said she was better now, and began to laugh. "My little woman," said her husband, dubiously, "are you quite sure you're better? Or are you, Sophia, about to break out in a fresh direction?" "No, Dolphus, no," replied his wife. "I'm quite myself." With that, settling her hair, and pressing the palms of her hands upon her eyes, she laughed again. "What a wicked fool I was, to think so for a moment," said Mrs. Tetterby. "Come near, Dolphus, and let me ease my mind, and tell you what I mean. Let me tell you all about it." Mr. Tetterby, bringing his chair closer, Mrs. Tetterby laughed again, gave him a hug, and wiped her eyes. "You know, Dolphus, my dear," said Mrs. Tetterby, "that when I was single, I might have given myself away in several directions. At one time, four after me at once, two of them were sons of Mars." "We're all sons of Mars, my dear," said Mr. Tetterby, jointly with Pa's. "I don't mean that," replied his wife, "I mean soldiers' sergeants."
"Oh,"
said Mr. Tetterby. "Well, Dolphus, I'm sure I never think of such things now, to regret them, and I'm sure I've got as good a husband, and would do as much to prove that I was fond of him, as any little woman in the world," said Mr. Tetterby.
"Very good. Very good."
If Mr. Tetterby had been 10 feet high, he could not have expressed a gentler consideration for Mrs. Tetterby's fairy-like stature, and if Mrs. Tetterby had been 2 feet high, she could not have felt it more appropriately her due. "But you see, Dolphus, said Mrs. Tetherby, this being Christmas time, when all people who can make holiday, and when all people who have got money like to spend some. I did, somehow, get a little out of sorts when I was in the streets just now. There were so many things to be sold, such delicious things to eat, such fine things to look at, such delightful things to have, and there was so much calculating and calculating necessary before I durst lay out a sixpence for the commonest thing, and the basket was so large, and wanted so much in it, and my stock of money was so small, and would go such a little way. You hate me, don't you, Dolphus?
Not quite, said Mr. Tetherby, as yet.
Well, I'll tell you the whole truth, pursued his wife, penitently, and then perhaps you will. I felt all this so much when I was trudging about in the cold, and when I saw a lot of other calculating faces and large baskets trudging about too, that I began to think whether I mightn't have done better and been happier if I hadn't. The wedding ring went round again, and Mrs. Tetherby shook her downcast head as she turned it.
I see, said her husband quietly, if you hadn't married at all, or if you had married somebody else.
Yes, sobbed Mrs. Tetherby. That's really what I thought. Do you hate me now, Dolphus?
Why no, said Mr. Tetherby. I don't find that I do, as yet.
Mrs. Tetherby gave him a thankful kiss, and went on. I begin to hope you won't now, Dolphus, though I'm afraid I haven't told you the worst. I can't think what came over me. I don't know whether I was ill, or mad, or what I was, but I couldn't call up anything that seemed to bind us to each other, or to reconcile me to my fortune. All the pleasures and enjoyments we had ever had, they seemed so poor and insignificant, I hated them. I could have trodden on them, and I could think of nothing else, except our being poor, and the number of mouths there were at home.
Well, well, my dear, said Mr. Tetherby, shaking her hand encouragingly, that's truth, after all. We are poor, and there are a number of mouths at home here.
Ah! But, Dolph, Dolph! Cried his wife, laying her hands upon his neck, my good, kind, patient fellow, when I had been at home a very little while, how different!
Oh, Dolph, dear, how different it was!
I felt as if there was a rush of recollection on me, all at once, that softened my hard heart, and filled it up till it was bursting. All our struggles for a livelihood, all our cares and wants, since we have been married, all the times of sickness, all the hours of watching we have ever had, by one another, or by the children, seemed to speak to me, and say that they had made us one, and that I never might have been, or could have been, or would have been, any other than the wife and mother I am. Then, the cheap enjoyments that I could have trodden on so cruelly got to be so precious to me, oh so priceless and dear, that I couldn't bear to think how much I had wronged them. And I said, and say again 100 times, how could I ever behave so, Dolphus? How could I ever have the heart to do it? The good woman, quite carried away by her honest tenderness and remorse, was weeping with all her heart, when she started up with a scream, and ran behind her husband. Her cry was so terrified, that the children started from their sleep, and from their beds, and clung about her. Nor did her gaze belie her voice, as she pointed to a pale man in a black cloak who had come into the room.
Look at that man! Look there! What does he want?
My dear, returned her husband, I'll ask him, if he will let me go.
What's the matter? How you shake?
I saw him in the street, when I was out just now. He looked at me, and stood near me. I am afraid of him.
Afraid of him?
Why? I don't know why I stop, husband.
For he was going towards the stranger.
She had one hand pressed upon her forehead, and one upon her breast, and there was a peculiar fluttering all over her, and a hurried unsteady motion of her eyes, as if she had lost something.
Are you ill, my dear?
What is it that is going from me again? She muttered, in a low voice. What is this that is going away? Then she abruptly answered.
Ill?
No, I am quite well, and stood looking vacantly at the floor. Her husband,
who had not been altogether free from the infection of her fear at first, and whom the present strangeness of her manner did not tend to reassure, addressed himself to the pale visitor in the black cloak, who stood still, and whose eyes were bent upon the ground. "What may be your pleasure, sir?" he asked, "with us." "I fear that my coming in unperceived," returned the visitor, "has alarmed you, but you were talking, and did not hear me." "My little woman says perhaps you heard her say it," returned Mr. Tetherby, "that it's not the first time you have alarmed her tonight. I am sorry for it. I remember to have observed her, for a few moments only, in the street. I had no intention of frightening her." As he raised his eyes in speaking, she raised hers. It was extraordinary to see what dread she had of him, and with what dread he observed it, and yet how narrowly and closely. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.